My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
It is essential that our team learns to work with our new recruit, not against him.
I'm a geek, walking down the street.
Check the computer.
The mainframe computer.
I access the mainframe.
At the end of this day, one shall stand, one shall fall.
Time to find out.
Welcome to Basically a Geek Show. Here are your hosts, Mike and Jack.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the eighth wonder of the world, episode 22 of Basically a Geek Show. As always, I'm Mike with Jack.
We're doing the thing with the stuff.
Yeah. We're coming at you. One week removed from my review of Transformers 4 Age of Extinction. And I said pretty much all I had to say about that movie, what I thought its flaws were, what I thought its strengths were, what I thought of its plot and characters and all that. I said all that last week. I really have nothing to add on to that, but I still—
Except that the internet thinks you're wrong.
Yes, I want to, I want to address, not so much the movie, but reactions to the movie. Now I'm gonna start right off the bat, a bit of a disclaimer. Covering my ass, if you will. There's no accounting for taste. There's no, entertainment is subjective. And if at the end of the day, you just simply didn't like Age of Extinction, you know what? That's your opinion. You have a right to it. I'm not trying to tell you you're wrong.
Yes, you are.
I'm not. No, not today. Not now. Not particularly this time. No. you know, at the end of the day, if you just don't enjoy it, you don't enjoy it, and that's fine. But there seems to, and I'm going to say the term critic or movie critic a couple times over the course of this rant, and I want to make it clear that I'm not directing this towards, you know, traditional movie critics. The Ebert and Roper type, that crowd. As far as I'm concerned, this, crowd lost legitimacy a long time ago. Just generally speaking, your traditional movie critics, they deviated from what the general public tends to enjoy so long ago that, you know what, bitching at them for not enjoying Age of Extinction would be pointless because, god damn it, if it's not Citizen Kane, they don't enjoy it.
And they wouldn't hear you anyways.
No, because they're
over the sound of their own arrogance and farts.
Also, they're all old.
And old. You know, people don't use computers.
No.
And when they do, it's horrible.
They still use, like, AOL, and it's just terrible.
How do I make this thing internet?
Oh, God. Just got a flood of memories, like, trying to teach my mom how to use a computer that just, God, no lie. I know, Mom, I know you listen to the show. I love you. But try the whole asking me how do you delete a file, and then I just had to put it into the recycle bin. Like, I still don't know what you were doing for the half an hour before you called me.
You know what? I can defend her on that.
Okay.
Because recycle bin, what the fuck? You know, it should just be called a fucking garbage can.
It was. I remember, like, when I was in, like, grade three. So, like, really little, like, kind of when personal computers first started to be a thing that people had, you know, in mass. I remember the little, like, thing in the right-hand corner of the screen was a trash bin, right? And
right.
Then, like, later on, when, you know, I was around, like, 12, 13, then it started to be like, the recycle bin, and it's been the recycle bin since then. I guess they... It's like, well, look, we're green and promoting the environment because our thing is a recycling container.
But that kind of, you know, okay, for one thing, I can say that with Windows, as far as I remember, and I've been using Windows since 3.1. or 3.5, I think, if that was a thing. Mm. 3 point something anyways. It's been named a recycle bin, I'm pretty sure. At the very least since Windows 95.
I cannot honestly remember what kind of computers we had when I was in grade 3, so.
Well, yeah, and the thing is that probably, given the age difference between us, that would have been close to, you probably would have been about grade 5 when I got my first PC. But, you know, recycle, okay?
It's completely inaccurate, cause like.
Right. It gives you, I mean, okay, if you're a complete novice to computers and, you know, you're doing like fucking Scotty was in Star Trek 4 picking up the mouse, hello computer, you know.
Computer, activate interwebs.
Right, exactly. I mean, you're going to think it's going to bring that shit back somewhere else.
Yeah.
And it, depending on what you're deleting, that could be a very terrifying prospect. I mean, you don't want your midget porn to be recycled. You want it gone. And, you know, it's not.
No, exactly. Exactly. When you open up, you know, what you're doing, you're deleting it. You're putting it into the thing, and then you empty the thing, and it's gone. That is a trash can. Recycling implies that it's going to, turn your old porn into, like, new interwebs or whatever. Like, I don't know.
Right, I mean, and I guess getting technical in the way hard drives work, shit's, I mean, when it's deleted, you're kind of recycling that hard drive space and making it free again.
I guarantee
but that's
you,
getting overly technical and
I guarantee
stupid about
you,
it.
That's how the Microsoft people justified it when they changed it.
Probably, and that's just getting overly technical and fucking stupid about it. I mean, but yeah, anyways, we've gone way off track here.
You know, we might have, but I'm still glad we had this discussion.
Indeed.
Yes, Age of Extinction. So, yeah, I'm not talking about, you know, the classic traditional style movie critics when I mention critics in this rant. I'm not talking about those people. You know, God damn it, they're never going to be happy with anything. I'm mostly referring to people who bring it upon themselves to write long-winded diatribes on the internet, and I'm taking it and I'm directing it at I guess what we'd call kind of I guess the newer breed of critic of movie critics that we see across the internet through vlogs, through reviews and whatnot. You know, those type of people. I'm going to avoid naming names because generally some of these critics I generally do enjoy on a broader basis, and I don't really want to disparage anyone. So I'm going to leave names out of it, but I am going to address general attitudes and opinions that I find lacking because, God damn it, I understand it if you hate a piece of crap that Michael Bay produces, but it gets really goddamn stupid when you people start ranting about anything Michael Bay makes and calling it crap just because Michael Bay makes it. Yes.
I'm sorry, go on.
Sorry, continue.
No, I was just going to say, actually, I think you're kind of touching on a bigger thing.
Am I?
This
purely by accident, I am.
Yeah,
sure,
yeah.
I'm sure
I mean, I kind of had this beef too, like movie, and, you know, we've made one of this podcast's more successful segments off of me liking movies that most people hate. But still, at the same time, that aside, there's, it's kind of becoming meet the new boss, same as the old boss. I mean, like the Ebert and Ropers and shit, they've died, but that's not the point. I mean, that style of critic has become less popular, and the new critic is, you know, the blogger or the YouTube video guys and
usually sitting in a chair in front of his camera just talking.
Right, and sometimes he rants about shit that no one else notices it's wrong with the movie for periods of time that's longer than the fucking movie itself. You know who I'm talking about.
I still find him enjoyable.
I do too, but, you know.
Yeah.
Anyways, and I think there's like this new elitism about movies where expectations are too high. And even if they're met, then immediately upon seeing it, the expectations are recast to make it fall short of them.
Exactly.
Because people bitching about shit, people getting angry about shit, gets more people watching than saying, you know what?
This was okay.
Pretty fucking good. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
I just want to jump in with something that particularly illustrates that point. Transformers, the first Transformers film back in 2007, had the scene where Sam Witwicky, played by Shia LaBeouf, the venerable Shia LaBeouf, I want to point out, yes.
That's going a bit far, but yeah.
He is in his room, and he's talking to Optimus Prime, you know, through the window, and he's trying to keep his parents out of the room because they're still doing the whole secret robots on Earth thing at this point. And, you know, there's the, are you masturbating in there, Sam? There's, like, that line, and, you know, that... I was in the theater for opening night for the first Transformers film, and hand to God, that line got laughs throughout the theater. So
that did when I seen it too.
Yeah, like people just like are like you know, yes, it was crude and sophomoric, but you know what? For its intended purpose, it served its purpose well. But okay, fine. Yes, that line was crude. It was sophomoric. Revenge of the Fallen had, of course, Jack's favorite scene, Devastator's Balls.
Fuck you.
But it also had, the Witwicky's two pet dogs humping each other. And it also had had Wheelie humping Michaela's leg. So.
Well, I mean, you know.
Point being, you know, people were like, oh, well, now it's just like there's so much of this juvenile humor. Okay, yes, yes, it was, it got a bit ridiculous. And, yeah. In Revenge of the Fallen. Dark of the Moon, the first shot of the movie, first goddamn shot of the movie, is a close-up on the ass of Sam's new girlfriend.
Well, you know.
Yes, I defend the Michael Bay movies, but yes, if you want to say that the first three movies suffered from an over-reliance on sophomoric... juvenile humor, then yeah, you know what? That's a fair criticism. I'm not going to deny that. But then during the filming of Age of Extinction, Michael Bay did an interview.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, we're taking that kind of humor out of Age of Extinction. I want to make this kind of more cinematic. I want to make it more dramatic. And we're not going to have that type of humor in the movie. Okay. And a lot of people on the internet was like, oh, yeah, okay, sure, whatever, Michael Bay. And I even saw people claiming that Michael Bay was incapable of making a movie without sophomoric humor. And I'm convinced that those Transformers fans who said that, the only Michael Bay movies they've seen are Transformers movies. Because I've seen a couple other Michael Bay movies unrelated to the Transformers franchise that don't have that sort of humor.
Yeah, I mean, Pearl Harbor didn't have dick jokes.
Pearl Harbor.
It probably could have used a couple.
The Island. I still maintain The Island is much maligned. Armageddon being another one that comes to mind. But point being, people were kind of like, okay, whatever, Michael Bay. Yeah, they were still expecting sophomoric humor. I'm here to tell you that, well, I admit that a lot of this is subjective. And again, if you just simply didn't like Age of Extinction, that's your right. If you come to me and tell me that Age of Extinction is... still, you know, full of this sophomoric humor, and it's like, oh, Bay's just at it again with this juvenile humor. No. That's not a case where we have opinions and agree to disagree. That is a factual inaccuracy on your part, because, goddammit, I've seen this movie twice now, and I can say, beyond a shadow of a doubt, the only sexual humor in this movie is Mark Wahlberg complaining that his daughter's shorts are too short. That's the only and really, that's it. That is it. The entire, the quote-unquote juvenile humor in this film revolves around Marky Mark being pissed off that his daughter's growing up. That's it. And it's and I thought, well, is it just a case of lowered expectations? No. From an objective standpoint, this movie has effectively discarded the type of humor that so many people derided the first three films for having. So you'd think that those, that these people, these critics and these, otherwise, angry internet masses would come out of seeing this movie and go, well, you know, maybe it still had its problems, but at least it didn't have that sophomoric humor, because it doesn't. But then they post their vlogs or they type up their manifestos, and
it's an ideology now, is it?
Yes, almost kind of. I'll get to that. But and now it's full. It's like, oh, Michael Bay, he's at it again. You know that sophomoric humor. You know, he hasn't grown as a filmmaker. Blah 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 blah.
He's raping everything we love.
Exactly. But and my point when I say it's like an ideology is because these people, have formed this opinion about what a Michael Bay movie is supposed to be, what a Transformers movie is supposed to be, and they form an opinion beforehand, and that's not even necessarily a bad thing because I think we all do that to some extent or another,
yeah.
Especially in a series that has multiple installments. Your expectations of what one installment is going to be, it will be shaped by the previous ones. That's unavoidable.
Right.
But the difference is that hating Michael Bay on the internet has become such an easy way to get likes and to get clicks and to get people to watch your video or read your post that the opinions aren't changed when the movie in question, really should. People complain that, like Revenge of the Fallen, Age of Extinction has an incoherent plot. No, it actually doesn't. Age of Extinction's plot is very to the point. It gets a bit scatterbrained at the end, but for the most part, all the major threads are pulled together nicely. Everything converges. And unlike the first Transformers film, which had the hackers, the Pentagon hackers that really went nowhere, this film doesn't really feel like it has any useless characters that you go, eh, you know what, they could have cut that for time. Because it doesn't. Like, it's not bloated with unnecessary characters. It's not bloated with unnecessary plot threads. There's two real threads that intersect relatively early on in the film, and then you're off to the races. I've seen people I've seen people say the plot's a mess, which it isn't. Oh, the acting is terrible. The acting's not terrible. Kelsey Grammer, by virtue of being Kelsey Grammer,
true,
provides what is really a one-note character with really a lot of gravitas, so much so that when I heard someone refer to him as a one-note character, I was like, wait, no, he wasn't. But then I thought about it, and I went back and thought about it, and like, you know what, no, the character really is one-note, but Kelsey Grammer really provides enough of a performance where he feels more fleshed out.
I've never thought one-note characters are inherently bad as long as they're not overused. Sometimes you need that.
You most definitely do. You most definitely do. I mean, they're one of the oldest literary tropes in existence for a reason. In whatever your medium of storytelling is, be it a book, be it a movie, be it a video game, if you're telling a story, the space you have is limited, either by runtime or by page count. So you've really got to establish characters and have your audience kind of form a connection with them relatively quickly. And having a one-note character who has easy-to-understand motivations, who has clear-cut loyalties, it makes it easier for the audience to, feel a connection with them in the relatively short amount of time you have to tell their story. So you're right. They do serve a purpose. But my point being that Kelsey Grammer kind of elevates the role. Mark Wahlberg, obviously, the Marky Mark impressions are kind of a thing on the internet. But, he's fine. He's unoffensive. And that's kind of how I describe everyone else. No one has a, you know, breakout performance. No one's winning an Oscar for Transformers 4, okay? But...
What?
But nobody is bad. And that's the thing. It's like, look, you're not going to go into Transformers... You can't go into every movie, every, you know, geek-centric or nerd-centric movie, expecting someone to blow you away like Heath Ledger did in The Dark Knight. Okay, it's not going to happen. That was the exception, not the rule. As a general rule of thumb, when it comes to these sort of movies, comic book movies, video game movies, movies that center to, you know, nerd culture, that are central to nerd culture, the best you can really hope for is, you know, an adequate performance that doesn't blow chunks. And you know what? If you get something that isn't mind-numbingly insulting, then... per the medium, per the genre's history, you're coming out ahead. And so I look at Age of Extinction's performances, you know, acting-wise, and everyone was either, you know, damn good or, you know what, perfectly fine and unoffensive. And I don't know what more people want from that, you know, want from a movie. Not just like this, but kind of just in general from this genre. You're not going to have people reinventing the craft of acting every single goddamn time. You know what? If you can get Marky Mark in your action movie, and he does a fine job, then you know what? That you came out ahead of the game. So good on you.
Yeah, I think, like I said, I think it's a case of... people, I think it's a bit of elitism in a lot of ways. I think nerd, geek culture, whatever, it's on the upswing right now and has been for a few years. Mm-hmm. And I think a lot of us are getting a little bit high on our own farts.
Mm, yeah.
We should just be thanking God that we are being taken seriously. You know, let's not become the thing that we hate.
Exactly. I mean, the fact that we are even here with a live-action Transformers film franchise that is considered financially viable and is considered a pillar of a major studio's roster of film franchises is... absolutely astounding. Could anyone in the Transformers fandom have predicted that in back in 2002? Back in 2002, when the world still freshly remembered Batman and Robin, could any DC comic book fan legitimately think of a world where Batman films were not just considered good superhero films, but were considered... actual smart cerebral pieces of entertainment.
Well, that's going to change in a couple of years.
Well, yes, Ben Affleck's here to swing us all back towards the other end. But for a while, it was working. But my point is that, you know, yeah, we've kind of arrived and we're getting everything we want. And I think you're right, Jack. It is a case of elitism. It is a case of what I said earlier, that hating Michael Bay has become so all-consuming, and it's become so predictable, and it's become so easy to get people on your side that you know, these people go into Age of Extinction with some expectations, which, again, is fine, but they don't adjust their views once the movie proves that some of those expectations were wrong. Just don't. They claim that, oh, no, movie's just as bad as I thought it would be, even though, you know, it wasn't. Better plot, better acting, no adolescent humor, actual time devoted to developing the Autobots' characters. If you would have told people that all these would be in a future Transformers movie after Revenge of the Fallen, people would have been like, oh, that sounds awesome. Well, we got that movie and people still are still complaining. And I think it's complaining because it's, oh, it's Michael Bay. It's easy to complain about Michael Bay. Someone is saying, like, say one of these new internet movie critics is saying, you know, I've done vlogs about how Michael Bay's Transformers movies suck for years and they get huge hits. So I'm just going to keep doing that regardless of how the new movie turns out. I saw one of the more prominent of these new internet movie critics. He usually does a, two-man thing, a two-man review with his brother. And again, I don't want to get into specifics because I don't want to really draw any attention to any of these guys who, for the most part, their content I generally enjoy. But for Age of Extinction, it was just him. And he said, oh, well, my brother isn't here because we were talking and he said he learned his lesson after after Dark of the Moon and he's not going to see any more Michael Bay Transformers movies, so he didn't. And I just thought, and he goes, and he feels that he's been justified by hearing people, you know, what they have to say about this film. And that kind of just pisses me off because, god damn it. I don't know if it's a case of Michael Bay actually listening to criticism or he just suddenly got it or maybe he's just being, maybe he's just surrounded by better people now. But if one is being truly honest with themselves, Age of Extinction is a marked improvement and a step forward from the previous two movies in almost every respect. So, when people come out and say, oh, Transformers 4 was terrible and everyone knew it would be terrible, or Transformers 4 sucks, it's Michael Bay doing more of the same crap, get your heads out of your fucking asses. Admit that you're just really hopping on this bandwagon because the Michael Bay hate-a-thon bandwagon is an easy one to jump onto. And actually give the goddamn film series the respect it deserves when it actually tries to better itself.
So, I'm going to, let's be proactive,
mm-hmm.
and let's address some of the more likely counter statements that you're going to get, some of the more insightful arguments that are going to be leveled at you for taking this stance.
Mm-hmm.
One, you're a mindless fanboy.
I am not a man. I am not a mindless fanboy. I am fully capable of admitting when a Transformers film sucks. Revenge of the Fallen, with the exception of some very good fight scenes, was a mess from a plotting standpoint. And character standpoint, too, really, when you get to the twins. Ugh.
Yeah.
In terms of Dark of the Moon was a step in the right direction, but I thought that the thing that they did to step Dark of the Moon in the right direction, which was to basically expand the final battle to something like, it's almost like an hour, it's almost reaches an hour long. It's kind of like they said, well, people liked the battles from Revenge of the Fallen, so we'll just make the battles longer, but it still kind of had a lot of the same pacing problems throughout
right.
the movie. But, so I am quite capable of criticizing Michael Bay Transformers films. In terms of Transformers, generally speaking, if I was a mindless fanboy, I wouldn't have given up on IDW comics back when they were doing Maximum Dinobots and All Hail Megatron, which were both kind of just bland garbage, and I really only got back into them when they started with the current, when they started with Last Stand of the Wreckers, which kind of the creative team then kind of went on to More Than Meets the Eye and Robots in Disguise, which are the current comics that I quite enjoy, but I did give up when I thought the product was lacking. I've sat out entire Transformers series. To be fair, I've given them a chance. I gave Animated a chance to win me over, and it didn't take. But, you know, I have been able to say, you know, this part of the franchise isn't for me. I'm just going to leave it by the wayside, and I'll come back to it at another time.
Okay.
I've criticized the Prime series. You know, I'm not just being, oh, Michael Bay, Transformers, woo! I am partly doing this segment because I kind of had lower expectations going into Age of Extinction, and I was pleasantly surprised by how far Age of Extinction not only met those lowered expectations, but kind of went a few steps beyond. And again, it's not a perfect movie by any stretch of the imagination, but for people who have been bashing the Bay films, especially the previous two, Revenge of the Fallen, Dark of the Moon, Age of Extinction is really a case where it addressed a lot of the common complaints, and that's why I'm really doing this, to say, no, if you're going to be honest with yourselves, it is a film series that is trying to correct itself. So that's how I would address the brainless fanboy thing.
Two, is your Special Olympics coach also your boyfriend?
No, he's not.
Okay.
Okay.
Three. Three. Are you Hitler?
No. No. Hitler and I would not get along for a few reasons.
Okay. Fair enough. Okay. Well, it's the internet, so, I mean, let's face it. These outcomes, these responses are pretty predictable. So I figured let's head them off with the pass.
Do you want to ask me what I know about Coco the Monkey?
I mean, I don't want to underestimate the relevance of Coco the Monkey. But I don't – I mean, this show can only be so long, so we should probably leave that for another time.
That's kind of an inside joke. I'll explain it to listeners. There was a thread on the TFW 2005 forums about the show Transformers Animated, a show both Jack and myself have made known on this show that we're not fans of. I got into a gentlemanly discussion about Transformers Animated.
Was this different from the one that I was reading?
Well, the funny thing was that, and I'm still not sure how it happened, but a discussion about a Transformers cartoon soon devolved into talking about Coco the Monkey, and then someone called someone else Hitler. And I'm still trying to this day to connect the dots of how those things kind of emerged. But yeah, Coco the Monkey, relevant to Transformers topics. But you're right, we can't go off on the Coco the Monkey tangent because, well, this show would be like 5 hours long.
Yeah.
As we discussed all the ways in which Coco the Monkey is relevant to Transformers fiction.
But now we do have something on a bit of a brighter note, Transformers-wise. Mm-hmm. 2015 is supposed to be evidently the year of the combiners.
There should be an asterisk next to that because Hasbro didn't say combiners, but they said combiners. We covered BotCon a few episodes back, episode 20, but we didn't cover this because it was all kind of shrouded in secrecy, and there were kind of bits of pieces of news kind of let out, and we didn't talk about it because what news we had at the time was so scarce and so colored by rumor and hearsay that it wouldn't have been worth it to mention it. But now, with BotCon over and the people who were at attendance at the convention, you know, back home and kind of telling the rest of the internet about it, we can address it. So, Generations, the line that aims to really kind of, I want to say it's a collector-oriented line. It's got a focus on reimagining previous iterations of characters, mostly from Generation 1, although there are some IDW, Beast Wars, and Armada figures in the line in general, but it's mostly G1. In 2015, they announced Generations is going to have a theme. For whatever reason, they weren't allowed to release all the information about it at BotCon due to a deal they have with whoever's going to be the exclusive retailer of this line.
But it's presumably Toys R Us.
It's probably Toys R Us, maybe Walmart. But it's going to be the year of combiners. Generation's going to be the year of combiners in 2015. They showed a silhouette of a figure that people say is very Superion looking. So we're probably going to get a Generations Superion, which will include, of course, 5 Generations aerial bots. There was a silhouette of a helicopter-shaped Transformer, which has led people to speculate that one of the other combiners will be either a redone Bruticus, because of course Vortex, a helicopter Decepticon, is on that team, or Defensor, because the helicopter Autobot Blades is on that team. And the other news item was dropped that said that this line will contain 16 new molds, 16 new figures. So, of course, people are trying to work the math out. My personal theory is that we will have three combiners. We're going to have Superion, so that's five aerial bots. That's five right there. The second one, it's either going to be a redone Bruticus or Defensor, but either way, that's five there, because both Defensor and Bruticus are made out of five. So that's 10 in total, and then to round it out to 16, we're going to get a proper Generations Devastator, because he's got, he's a six-bot combiner, and so that'll make 16. That's my personal theory. I know I've run this by you, Jack, and I know you have some thoughts on which combiners should be in it and which shouldn't. So I guess we'll start from the top. Devastator, sort of the iconic Transformers combiner. You say Transformers combiner to any fan, Devastator is the first one they think of. Yay or nay on Generations Devastator?
Oh, definitely yay. I mean, the only crime with that is that this wasn't done years ago. I mean.
Well, when the Generations line was first launched as Classics back in 2006, they repainted an Energon construction combiner team in purple and green and called it Devastator, but it really wasn't Devastator, and it kind of
sucked. Yeah, I'm not counting that. I mean, an actual, honest to God, real fucking Devastator that you don't have to pay, you know, a third party, you know, $600 for.
I will say, like, some of those third party.
Oh, they're splendid.
They're splendid toys, but I don't have $600 to throw away on.
Right. You know? Exactly. I mean, if I did, oh yeah, I'm totally fucking there, but I don't, so, well, I won't. No, Devastator long overdue. And, you know, my body is ready.
Indeed. You know, I don't know how you there's a minority opinion, at least I think it's a minority from what I've seen, that is like, oh, Devastator gets too much play, but you know what? It hasn't happened yet, and if this is going to be the year of combiners, which again, Hasbro hasn't officially said it'll be the year of combiners, but it's gonna be the year of combiners. if you're gonna do the year of combiners, you kinda have to do Devastator, because I'd say that he's kind of the Optimus Prime of, if you just looked at combiners, Transformers combiners, he's the Optimus Prime. He's the one you first think of, he's the one you kinda have to have first.
The only way that I could say that the argument that Devastator gets too much play could be even justified would be hearing about him, I don't know. I mean, you can't count that shit from Revenge of the Fallen. That was a fucking abomination. I mean, that thing was a fucking joke.
That toy was an abomination. It cost something like $200, this giant Devastator toy. You could separate him into the individual Constructicon vehicles, but the individual Constructicon vehicles had no individual robot modes, and the combined form was so big, you pretty much had to sacrifice a room to put him anywhere.
Yeah, I mean, Devastator needs an update. Devastator needs a revamp. I can see the not again argument on a lot of the Generations figures. I mean, do we really need another version of Megatron or Optimus Prime? But Devastator, no. No, he's not in that category.
Mm. Indeed. And, you know, just someone who from afar has been kind of looking and appreciating these third-party Devastators, the two big being Hercules and Giant. I've seen both of those. They're both splendid. Of course, cost has kind of kept me away from them. So you know what? Yeah, this will be official from Hasbro. It'll cost standard retail. I'm up for it. You know what? I'll finally have a decent revamped Devastator of my own. And again, there's no real confirmation that he'll be in it, but they're saying 16 molds. And most Transformers combiners are five five-member teams. And so I don't see how you get 16 unless you throw Devastator in there. Unless you have 2 5-member teams and then Devastator, that's 16. So that's sort of where I'm coming from on that one. It's the only way that an all-combiner wave makes sense would be to work Devastator in there somewhere. So let's go to the other one. The one that we know is confirmed because the silhouette was very, very much evoked this character, or this combined form, Superion, yay or nay?
About fucking time.
Hmm.
Autobot combiners have always been kind of a bit of a dodgy affair to begin with.
Mm-hmm.
But Superion was awesome. I mean, for one thing, you had that cool factor of the Autobots were never really known for their air power. But you have Superion is like, hey, look at me. I'm made of planes and I do the plane thing.
Yeah, before Superion, the Autobot Air Force was Jetfire, who spent most of the cartoon underneath, like buried in the Arctic. And
right.
Powerglide, who didn't do much of anything.
Yeah, yeah. Except try to get his pre-con with some human chick, I think, as I recall.
Yeah, that was weird.
Yeah, well, you know. That was probably done for the Japanese audience. But yeah, Autobots with air stuff, always kind of a thing that really just didn't happen very often. And then all of a sudden, bam, you know, you got
five of them.
Yeah, five of them, and they combined, and fuck yes. So, yeah, you know, I really look forward to that. I'm especially looking forward to seeing what kind of molds they come up with, some of them, you know, how much they deviate. Because Silverbolt, I mean, the Concorde's no longer a thing, really. So it'll be interesting to see if they keep that kind of aesthetic of the Concorde with him.
You know what? I hope they do, because even though it's no longer a thing, that was one cool-looking plane.
Oh, agreed. Agreed, definitely. But it'd be kind of interesting to see, you know, what they end up doing with that. And I would like to see, you know, a bit more love given to the others. I mean, some of the original Aerial Bots, I mean, let's face it, their plane modes were kind of dirt.
Yeah.
They didn't get the same love that the Seekers got. In terms of their designs, of course, I mean, they really weren't, you know, besides Silverbolt, they weren't full-size Transformers. But, you know, I would like to see them given a little more love and care and you know, have some updated designs that actually look like something coherent. I'm down.
Indeed. A lot of the Aerial Bots, they also have very simple transformations. You basically folded the plane off on the robot's back, and then the plane's underside, you, like, flipped out some arms, and that was it.
Well, I mean, okay. I mean, Devastator was like that. Most of the combiners, the arms and legs were all like that.
Yeah. But I guess what I'm saying is that with modern technology, we could – I hope they at least play around with some – design aspects, maybe, you know, not reinvent the wheel, but, you know, make them seem more like fully realized robots in their own right.
Yeah. I mean, I know with, well, we'll get to that in a bit.
And now this final one, there was a silhouette shown of a helicopter.
Yeah.
Now there are only two combiner teams that feature helicopters, one Autobot, one Decepticon. The Decepticon would be Bruticus. So people have been saying, are we getting a new Bruticus? The big thing about Bruticus is that he got a combiner. He got the first real combiner in years, back 2 years ago, back in 2012, when they launched the Fall of Cybertron generation.
Wasn't that last year?
No, it was end of 2012, early 2013.
Okay, fair enough.
But because I distinctly remember getting it while visiting my parents for the holidays, and it was still December.
Fair enough.
Point being that this is a that we've gotten a recent Bruticus. Granted, he wasn't G1 styled; he was more in the style of the video games, the Fall of Cybertron video game. But do you think? How would you feel if this ends up being a generation's Bruticus, as someone who has the fall of Cybertron, Bruticus, will you feel like, oh, they're just ripping us off, two of the same character, such a short time span? What would your thoughts be?
I wouldn't be – okay. Same character. When it comes to Bruticus, I mean, again, combiners have been very neglected for years now.
Mm-hmm.
So I wouldn't be upset about another Bruticus. I would be upset if they use the same molds and it's another fucking recolor. I'd be upset with that.
I doubt they would.
But if it's more of a kind of like a G1 aesthetic.
Yeah, with Earth-based alternate modes instead of the Cybertronian ones.
Right, exactly. Mm-hmm. Then you probably have me on board.
Hmm.
I kind of don't think they're going to do that, though.
Well, if it's not going to be Bruticus, then we got to go the only other Transformers Combiner team that has a helicopter member.
Oh, fuck me.
And that is the Autobots' second most popular combiner, Defensor.
You know what? Fuck Defensor. I mean, I'm just saying.
So I can mark Jack down for a maybe on picking up Generations Defensor.
You know, the sad thing is, if it looks cool enough, I'll probably still fucking pick it up, but still, fuck Defensor. I mean, damn it. What a dribbling nose of a fucking combiner. I mean, all right. Okay. Here's my beef with Defensor.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I think I had all of Defensor as a kid. I'm pretty sure I did.
Mm-hmm.
Or at least most. Anyways, I digress. Pretty sure I had all of them though.
Mm-hmm.
All right. Yes, it fits in with the Autobot theme. It fits in too well with the Autobot theme. It had a very generic, most of the Autobot combiners honestly kind of had a bit of a generic feel to them, but Defensor especially just felt like more rescue vehicles. And I can
get that because, okay, you in the Generation 1 cast before Defensor shows up, you had Ratchet, ambulance, and then you had Inferno. Fire truck.
You had Ratchet, Inferno. You had Prowl. You had police Red car. Alert.
No, but Red Alert was part of Defensor.
Oh, that's right.
No, wait. Sorry. No. What's... First Aid was part of Defensor. Sorry.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah.
But the point being that you had all of these emergency vehicle Autobots, and then Defensor shows up, and you're like, well, okay. Well, who's in Defensor? There's Hotspot, who is a fire truck. Granted, he's blue. He's not red, so, you know, he differentiates himself from Inferno a bit there, but still. But then you have First Aid, who is, like, not Ratchet.
Yeah.
he's an ambulance, and he's a medic, but he's not Ratchet.
Emergency.
They better put Emergency.
Okay, for the listeners, there's a third-party knockoff, like not like high-quality third-party, like cheap-ass third-party knockoff of G1 Defensor, and on the side of the ambulance,
it says Emergency.
Yeah, it says Emergency on the side of the fucking thing. Theo did a review. It was knockoff, knockdown, or knockout,
knockoff,
or whatever.
Knockoff,
beatdown, number three, if you ever want to check that out. Hilarious as shit. Anything by Hugh is fucking hilarious.
Mm.
But anyways, I digress. Defensor just, I'd rather see fucking Computron.
Nerd.
Computron at least was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
It still kind of had that generic as fuck feel to it, for me at least, but it was at least kind of interesting.
Well, all of his alt modes were nondescript future vehicles.
Right, and, you know, I'm not fucking Defensor.
Well, the thing with Defensor is that, okay, if you have Superion, okay, most of the combiners are Decepticons, and most of the cool ones are Decepticons, because who do the Decepticons have? Devastator. Okay. Yeah, he's construction vehicles. That might seem a bit pedestrian, but he was the first. So he was the first badass motherfucker to do the combiner thing.
Yeah.
Then, okay, who else do you have? You have Mensor, who again, cars. That might seem pedestrian, but he kind of has the reverse Superion thing going. You didn't see a lot of car Decepticons. So
right.
He's interesting, at least on that level. Then you've got Predaking, who fucking owns.
Yep, and then you had to have Abominus.
Abominus, he's made out of dragons, and his knees have teeth. And then who else? And then you have Bruticus, who is made out of military vehicles, and is the it is the central plot element of the horrendous Generation 1 episode, which is still worth your time if you want to see a complete train wreck, called Brawl's Brain, I think. Or Bot something or other. Point being, it's terrible. But Bruticus is awesome. So you've got all these really cool Decepticon combiners, and then the Autobots, you really only have three. You've got Superion, who, okay, Superion's cool. But then you've got Computron, who is, like, a scientific genius, but they're all individually geniuses, but they form a giant robot because apparently he's going to form a giant robot to do math at the Decepticons.
Totally.
And
And
then you've got Defensor, who is made out of generic rescue vehicles, and he defends things, I suppose. But it's just weird, because the Autobot teams, once you get past Superion, there's a huge dip in quality when it comes to those Autobot teams. And I guess they wanted to just hit it strong, get this line launched with a big Autobot presence, because, you know, kids love good guys, I guess, so... It's like, oh, look, Defensor and Superion, and maybe they figure that that'll help. I don't know. But, God, Defensor is... Yeah.
And as much as I hate to say it, I see it being Defensor over Bruticus, because I don't see them doing another Bruticus.
Well...
This soon, at least.
Apparently, people... who were at the show kind of said that the silhouette they showed of the helicopter guy, they said it looked a bit too Blades-esque, like he had kind of rounded edges and not sharp corners, like in terms of design. So they were saying that it looked more like Blades than it did Vortex, which would point towards Defensor over Bruticus. And yeah, Defensor, but you know what? That's really interesting that they seem to be on a Defensor kick lately, because there's going to be this thing. And then Asia, Hasbro is releasing an Asian market exclusive set of some Transformers Prime characters done up like the Protectobots who form Defensor. So, you know, they don't combine, but it's like Prime Ratchet as First Aid, Universe... Inferno is Hotspot, and then I think it's Prime Prowl, it's Streetwise, and then a couple others. But you know, you get the
right.
Rest.
Yeah.
But so that kind of leads to the whole Defensor thing, because Defensor, it seems to be what's on the minds of the team, the Hasbro developmental team at the moment.
Well, I mean. The only thing that's cool about it is that, you know, at least combiners are getting some love. It'll be new molds, so, you know, maybe it'll be more interesting. I just really – any combiner except Defensor.
Well, I mean, if the goal is to eventually do them all, he was going to happen at some point.
Well, but we don't know that that is their goal.
I think it will be. It might not be all at once, but, like, okay, since Classics started back in 2006, and then Classics kind of morphed into Universe, then Universe morphed into Generations, since Classics started, they've been really good about... They didn't release the entire 84 Autobot cast all at once, for example. But over the three kind of iterations of the line, they've eventually gotten updates of the original Autobot cast. So the way I see it, I think Hasbro, once they start something, they're like, okay, we're going to finish this. It might not be all in the same wave, or it might not even be all in the same iteration of the line, but I do think that once they start this whole combiner thing, the goal will be to eventually do them all.
What I would actually like to see are some original combiners. Let's see some new shit.
Well, the problem is, though, is that, like, the fandom, like, we know who all the old combiners are. Like, if they just create a random team of, like, a school bus and, like, a FedEx truck and, I don't know, a septic school tank.
Bus. School bus, the Edubots.
The Edubots. But, you know, like, if they just create a bunch of these new teams and there's no fiction to go along, because the Generations line operates without fiction. So if they just release a bunch of these new teams, a bunch of these new molds, like, as fans, I don't know who the Edubots are. Like, why should I care?
Because, I don't know, they combine into a big robot. That's evidently the fucking thinking behind Defensor.
But at least Defensor showed up in some episodes in G1, so...
Sadly.
Like, but, like, at least you have the option, at least you have that going in, that you know, maybe a collector would be like, oh, I remember Defensor.
Well, you know, look, they can make fiction. Call the fuckers at IDW. I mean, we got Windblade.
Well, Windblade was the fan-built bot.
Well, yeah, but it's a... She's a new character, at least. Yeah, they can do something. Yeah, let's shake shit up a little bit. Let's... God damn it, I don't want Defensor. I don't care what I have to pull out of my ass to justify it. I don't want Defensor.
Mm-hmm.
Fuck Defensor. It's a fucking joke.
Oh, well, I guess. Oh, well. That's Transformers, Generations update at the moment. That should be it for BotCon. I don't suspect we'll see anything else until San Diego Comic-Con. I do believe, there's no proof of this, but the general consensus that I tend to agree with is that we're going to see at least some of these combiner reveals at San Diego Comic-Con. So we'll know for sure once that happens, and then we'll talk about it then, and Jack can weep before the glory that will be the pictures of Generations Defensor.
I don't recall you being a big fan either.
No, I'm not. I'm not. I am not, no. The most I can say is that I kind of like Hotspot in terms of his decal because he's a blue fire truck and he kind of just looked cool.
And for that matter, where the fuck has anyone ever seen a fucking blue fire truck?
As far as I know, they are red or like that neon green yellow color.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen some yellow ones and, of course, the red ones, but a blue, really? What?
I don't know. I guess they needed something. Like, I guess it gives him his own identity. He doesn't, like, turn him into, like, not Inferno.
I mean, by making him blue, that's pretty much even more blatant. Hey, look, he's blue because he's not Inferno. whatever.
But moving on, our last bit of Transformers news. Last week, Jack, you gave us your thoughts on Transformers Universe.
Yes.
And JAGX, the developers of Transformers Universe, they have, to coincide with the opening of beta, they have a little press release going on here.
Oh, joy.
And I wanted to read you the press release, and I wanted to see what you, someone who's played the game, has to think about this corporate-esque bit of words. Because... Yeah. Anyway, I'll get started. Transformers, the free third-person MOBA, parentheses, multiplayer online battle arena game.
Oh, so now we're back to a MOBA, are we? Okay, go on.
I guess they finally admitted that it's a MOBA.
Yeah.
is proud to announce it's going into open beta and available to all gamers beginning this, and then the date that it was released. Going into open beta now means the players can simply register and instantly jump straight into the action as a Transformers Universe Commander. Did you feel like you were jumping straight into the action as a Transformers Universe Commander, sir?
Well, my first reaction is I'm glad that it is an open beta. Because you know what, bitch? You're coming on after this show, and you're going to come into this fucker, and you're going to suffer with me.
Aw.
That's right. Come on, do it for the listeners. They need a second opinion. It's your duty. Duty.
It's going to suck. Okay.
Jump straight into the action as an Autobot commander. Wow. Straight into the action. Yeah, whatever. I mean, it's your standard corporate gobbledygook.
This weekend, we're going to be celebrating this fantastic milestone with double XP weekend!
Oh, whoop-de-titty-fucking-do.
And a $75,000 prize to be won over this weekend.
Which will buy you, like, what, a 2-year subscription?
Yeah.
Now we know where all that money's going to, right?
Yeah, I guess.
Endgame socialism.
We're delighted to be opening our game to the public, a game we believe is worthy to be Jagex's second massive multiplayer online game, Mark Gerard, Jagex CEO, said. Sir, does this game feel like it deserves the stamp of Jagex quality?
Yes.
Is that a good thing?
You know, I can't say. All right. Yeah, when I said yes, I was being sarcastic, of course. But their first game was RuneScape. I never played RuneScape. So I couldn't tell. I mean, I know a lot of people cut their MMO teeth on RuneScape and have very fond memories of it. And I'm not going to disparage it because I never played the fucking game. I mean, my first MMO was WoW.
Mm-hmm. And as was mine.
Yeah. I know because I drug you into it kicking and screaming. But I couldn't say. I stand by what I said last week. The game is mediocre.
Mm-hmm. Now, they say, true to our heritage, we've pioneered a game in which all content can be enjoyed for free simply through play. Of almost 2 million battle victories recorded during closed beta, our players evidently had the most fun and success while playing together with friends in a team. I've been delighted to see teams invent strategies and tactics that we have not even imagined.
So that's their way of saying they broke the game and caused a balancing nightmare.
And now now people are going to get nerfed.
Yeah, basically. I mean, strategies that we never even imagined. That's not something you want to hear a game developer say, because that means that they're going to go in and they're, of course, going to rebalance everything. That means we fucking broke it, basically.
Now is your time to take control of an ever-expanding squad of all new Transformers warriors and heated battles of skill across multiple maps and game modes, with a range of customization available in the form of weapons, armor, and power cores. Each one of these unique Transformers warriors can be modified to match your playing style. And end of press release. Copyright 2014 Hasbro, all rights reserved.
Can they be customized to not control, like, petrified turds?
Can I customize them so I can actually play characters I know and love from the Transformers universe?
Or at least make our own. I mean, they have, again, you know, not to beat the horse that I beat to death last week, but they have the character creation asset, you know, assets made that they didn't want to go to waste, so they use them to make these fucking things.
Mm-hmm.
Well, fuck all. We could have done that, and then at least we'd have had some fucking attachment to the character. At least it'd be ours.
Mm-hmm.
Indeed. Now it's just going to be a, hey, generic bots.
Yeah. And again, that's kind of what we said last week. Like, you're not tapping into that MOBA audience of, oh, I get to play as all these great characters. It's, I get to play as these generic guys who have no fiction to support them, and I don't know why I should care.
Right, exactly. I mean, and, all right. Like I said last week, even if, like, you know, your first spot that you could make out of the starting gate was kind of generic looking, make different aesthetic features unlockables, you know, or purchasable for real life money, because that's a way that you can get income for the game that's not game balance impacting.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's not pay to win, it's pay to customize, and that doesn't affect, you know, mm-hmm. It's still, you know, mostly a skill-based game. Now, again, I did put, you know, some more time into the game. I haven't changed my mind. I'm still, you know, I'm still not sure if it's exactly pay to win. I'm, you know, I couldn't really tell you.
Mm-hmm.
I get the feeling it's probably is going to be, but that's just my own cynicism coming in.
Now, on the video game front, there we have some WoW news to discuss, don't we?
Yeah, we were right.
Did we ever actually say we were right on show? Did we? I can't remember if we talked about guild leveling on the show or not, because
I think we may have. I seem to remember
doing an episode where we sort of talked about WoW mechanics, and I think we might have talked about it then, but I'm not sure.
I think we did. I mean, guys, listeners, yeah, Mike and I have so many conversations off air, and sometimes we will tend to, but a lot of times what you guys hear is pretty much the same as just listening in on one of our normal Skype conversations.
Mm-hmm.
And because of that, it's kind of difficult for us to disseminate what we said on air and what we didn't in a few cases, and this is one of them. I'll recap real quick. Basically, you know, Mike and I, I used to run a guild or co-run a guild, called Reciprocity on the Cosmodon server Alliance side because mission to civilize. And,
it's still operating as a subsidiary of Disraeli Imports.
Oh, shut the hell up. Yeah, it is still operating. It'll be, you know, we'll try to boot her back up come, Warlords of Draenor time, but the point here is that a lot of our, you know, friends and such that we'd had kind of left the game, had other shit to do, and we did try to, you know, resurrect the guild. We found it to be very difficult because at that time we didn't have – that was right around the beginning of Cataclysm, and there were so many guilds that were like level 20 because they had this fucking guild leveling system,
They introduced the guild leveling system, yes, which – for those who just want a bit of background on it, so you know what we're talking about, guilds didn't used to have levels prior to Cataclysm. Up through Lich King, it was just a guild. But then they had guild leveling. And what guild leveling did was the more that you and your guild accomplished, the guild would level up, and it went level 1 to 25. And each time you hit a level, you got a new perk that you could do independently, so like your character would gain perks based on your guild being a certain level. And as Jack and I found, that kind of hurt trying to either start a new guild or revive an older guild.
Yeah, because basically, unless your guild was, you know, level 20 or is it 25? 25, I think, was
25
the highest.
Was the max, yes.
Yeah. You know, they really didn't want anything to do with you.
Mm-hmm.
That combined with, you know, looking for raid, which kind of sapped a lot of people's interest, you know, on the casual side of things to actually commit to doing raids, you know, the real way.
I mean, I learned how to play the game doing raids the real way, and I learned through that, you know, this is how you play, this is how you get gear. You know, it taught you, these are the items you need to make enchantments, and it really taught you how to play the game properly. And I admit, since looking for raid, I just can't be arsed for any of it because I don't, it means I don't have to do I don't have to do all that learning. I don't have to learn how to get all the best gear anymore. I could just go into looking for raid, and I can get all of the materials for enchants, and I can get all of the gems, and I can get all the gear I need through playing the game on what is essentially dumbed down easy mode.
Yeah, and it was real funny when we were bringing Mike into his first raid, because we'd been bitching about someone that we'd brought in as a temporary raider and how fucking incompetent they were. And Mike's like, was it really that bad? And I said, yeah. And I started telling him, you know, how bad this fucking cretin was. He says, well, hell, I could do better than that.
And keep in mind, I had never raided before. I was still in, like, the basic tier armor that you get just by doing PV. Like, I was not raid ready at all, but I was like, yeah, you know what? Fuck, I could do better than that.
Right, exactly. And he said it rhetorically, but I just kind of paused for a minute and said, you know what? You're right. Raid's in 10 minutes.
Like what? I've been flying around in a circle in Dalaran for the past half hour.
Oh, my God. What do I do? But the thing was, I mean, Mike was right. We went in and we actually got further with him, and he contributed, even though he had shit gear. He had quest gear, basically, or heroic dungeon gear, with some quest gear still even. And of course, this is, you know, back during Wrath of the Lich King. But you know, we got further with him because he's not an idiot. He made mistakes. We all do. He didn't know how to really do things in a raiding environment necessarily, but he could follow simple instructions.
And you know what? I learned over time.
And really, that's all quote unquote real raiding is in WoW. You listen to simple instructions, and then the rest is just repetition.
A lot of repetition. The difficult part comes in when people can't understand simple instructions. When you're like, I need everyone to wait here for my signal. And then some hunter is like, I shot him with my gun now. And like the boss is charging. You're like, oh, fuck.
Yeah. It's always a hunter for some reason. Or I've had a lot of warlocks and rogues do stupid shit too.
Well, because rogues are so used to being like, LOL, I'm invisible, stabby, stab, stab. And then like they don't realize that there are raid mechanics to account for that and that they still need to follow instructions. And then when they don't, everyone dies.
Yeah, I've seen that gone awry several times. Yeah, I'll just go stealthy and go ahead of these mobs. And oh, look, he pulled them. Awesome. Like, as soon as one would do that, you know, the first few times I'd seen it, I'd start to say something. And, of course, you know, the rogue, is if they weren't in guild, if they were what we call a pug, which is someone you just brought in, pickup group is what it stands for. And, you know, they wouldn't fucking listen because they're sitting there, I like tater tots. I'm a rogue. I know what I'm doing. I got invisibles. And they fucking go up there.
Oh, look, they just pulled, like,
the
20-foot tall death skeletons, and now.
Right, exactly. As soon as they'd fucking run ahead, you know, I'd have my finger on the fucking taunt button, I'd have the other on consecrate, and I was ready, and I'd just run on up there, okay, here we go, this is a thing.
But the point being that, you know, it used to be that raids didn't have these levels, and that you could go into a guild, you could go in, guilds didn't have these levels, you could go into a guild, and you know what, as long as you had people who weren't dicks, even if you didn't know how to raid, if you were willing to learn how to raid, it was really easy to pick up. You followed instructions, you showed up when you were supposed to, and you just, you know, it was like any other video game. If you wanted to get good at it, you had to learn certain mechanics, and if you worked at that, you could be good at this game too if you enjoyed it.
Yeah.
And
we built, I mean, back in Lich King, I mean, we built our guild, our raiding contingent, out of people that no one else would take.
Mm-hmm.
And they were good. Mm-hmm. They just had, no one had given them a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You know? And, I mean, we culled out the tards. We definitely did. But we got a lot of other people who, you know, wouldn't be able to get raid spots just because, oh, well, your gear's not good enough. Well, gear does matter, but to a certain point, the skill and the willingness to listen and try matters more.
And again, if someone's guild's, if a guy's gear sucks, how do they get better gear? By raiding.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
You know,
to kind of pull us back on track to the guild leveling, when they introduced guild leveling, it became incredibly hard because along with guild leveling, they added guild reputation.
Yeah.
And so say you're either trying to start a new guild at the launch of Cataclysm or you're trying to maybe revive an older guild midway through Cataclysm's tenure and you've got a low-level guild and guild rep is a big thing because guild rep allows you to buy certain perks that come along with higher levels. So you're trying to recruit, and recruiting wasn't all that hard in Lich King because it's like, hey, you need a guild to run in. We're looking for people to run. You know, let's hook up and hey, this is when we run, show up and we'll run. It wasn't a hard formula, really. But now it's like, oh, well, what level are you? And it's like, oh, well, you know, our guild, we're just starting out, or we revived a dead guild, and, you know, we're only level 5, and they'll be like, well, the current guild I'm in isn't giving me a chance, or the current guild I'm in is kind of inactive, and I'd love to join your guild, but my guild's level 25, and so I get all these perks, so I can't join your guild. And if I quit my guild, I'll lose guild rep, and I'll have to start from the bottom again. And then it handicapped the development of lower level guilds. Lower level guilds couldn't get off the ground.
Yeah. And when it came to, you know, when we got closer to Warlords of Draenor being announced, I had said, and again, I don't recall whether I said this on the air as well. I know at least in private, I'd said it to Mike. Mm-hmm. You know, I'd say, you know, you're going to see one of two things from Blizzard. You're going to see them either A, expand the guild leveling system and address some of its flaws, mm-hmm. or B, they're not going to say anything. Which, if they don't say anything, they're probably going to be removing it.
And they didn't say anything.
Right, they didn't say anything. And I remember you at the time said, well, you know, the problem is with that, you know, if they remove guild leveling, people are going to bitch because it's been around for a few years now and you can't just go ripping something out.
And it does provide all these perks that say, you know, if you just take it away, people will be complaining, well, where did my perks go?
Right. And what they're ending up doing is they're actually kind of splitting the difference. They are removing guild leveling. But now they're just assigning. So some of these perks are being held over. Some of them are going to be gone. Like cash flow, for example, is gone. Because they said it wasn't even that effective anyways.
No, it wasn't. Like, I'm currently the guild master on Reciprocity because Jack currently, hasn't activated his account for a while. I pop in every now and then, so I technically see the guild cash influx. And even when we were active and running regularly, cash flow wouldn't do anything. It would be like, what cash flow was like anytime your guild went on a raid or a dungeon run, the gold and silver that you picked up off of mobs, a fraction of that would be deposited into the guild bank.
Yeah, it was almost like a guild income tax, except it didn't take it out of the player's pocket. It just added that, like, you know, 5% extra. Or 10% extra and put it in the guild bank.
It never amounted to anything. Like, going through, like, the guild bank's records, it's like, 30 silver deposited this week from guild flow, from cash flow. I'm like, well, we actually ran a lot this week, and we just got 30 silver. Well, this is the high end.
Yeah. And the thing is, you know, some of these people were exploiting that, because while for a guild that does, you know, the way we run things where it's, you know, we try to give everyone a fair shake and we, you know, pretty much pay for repairs for everybody when possible, when the money's there to permit it. Unless someone just goes stupid with it, you know, we do try to provide mm-hmm. that service. And it's not a meaningful amount if you're doing that. Now, for example, though, and this is where people were exploiting it, if you're the guild master, and you've got it set to where only you can withdraw money from the guild bank and no one else can do anything, and you're going and you're recruiting people, new people just spawning in, you're just spamming invites to them because why not, and they're joining because derp, mm-hmm. you know, then yeah, that can be an appreciable amount for one person.
Mm-hmm.
But for a guild that's actually raiding and doing things and functioning, it's nothing.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
So they're getting rid of cash flow, and they said they're going to replace that with some other mechanic to try to help fund guilds. For example, they said something about bringing in more bind-on-equip items.
Mm-hmm.
Where, you know, the guild can say, okay, well, we're taking that if no one needs it, and we're going to auction it off, and the proceeds will go into the guild bank.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one thing they're going to be doing, or at least one thing that they're looking at doing. Now, the other things like, you know, instant guild mail and faster travel and some of that other shit, they're just going to leave that as just
the perks of being in a guild.
Exactly. All guilds will be the same. There's no level to it.
Which is what I said back when we first had this conversation. I said the only way I could see them getting rid of it is if they took the perks, they took these perks and just made them inherent in being in a guild, and that's what they're doing. So
Yeah. And, you know, they wanted to encourage people to be in guilds, and I get it.
But the leveling and the reputation systems both just hamstrung anyone's ability to get a new guild off the ground. It just was, and when we were trying to revive reciprocity midway through Kata, not only did we have to contend with being a low level guild, so not only did we have to contend with people not wanting to give up perks and reputation, but then again, the, looking for raid function that we mentioned earlier, that killed our ability to pug.
Right, because at that point, well, you know, your introductory players, your lesser skilled players are like, well, hell, you know, I'll just run this. I'm doing the same fights. I'm getting purple gear.
Because
at that point, you don't know the difference. You really don't care. You're progressing your character. You know, they don't care. And really, what incentive was there to care for a lot of them? And yeah, it killed pugging. And when that was a primary way that we recruited, we didn't really very often spam recruitment messages in trade chat. We never did that shit of, you know, you just send someone at random and fucking guild invite. We never did that. We recruited through pugging. We would grab someone through trade chat, you know, hey, you know, we need four more people for a raid.
And then what would happen, they'd show up. They'd run with us, and then they'd say, hey, we liked running with you guys. Can we run with you again next week? We'd say, sure. And then over a month or two of them running with us, we'd say, hey, you know what? We get along. We like you. You like us. Why don't you just join the guild? And then they would.
Right. And that wasn't the case of us being – to some degree, it was us being a little bit – I wouldn't say hardcore. I always kind of classified us as a medium core raiding guild.
Mm-hmm.
Because at one point, you know, we only did 10-man pugging or 10-man raiding. But we were, you know, in the top 10 for 10-man raiding on our server.
Mm-hmm.
I know, you know, a lot of people are like, 10-man raiding, whatever. But for us, it was a thing, and we were happy with it until a lot of the guild members wanted 25-man, but that's another story.
And they ruined it all for everyone.
Yeah.
sorry, go on.
But yeah, I mean, you know, that was how we did a lot of our recruiting, pretty much all of it, because that helped us filter out idiots.
Indeed. And so what I'm looking at now is guild leveling is going to be gone. I'm not sure if guild rep will be gone, but I could potentially see with the leveling system gone, guild rep won't mean as much, so people won't be as hesitant to lose it when switching guilds. I also see that they're trying to de-emphasize looking for raid. So, all in all, I feel really good about this. It's going to make it much easier to recruit. It's going to make it much easier to get new and older guilds off the ground. And hopefully it'll help us as we try to sort of revive reciprocity.
Yep. And any of you guys who play World of Warcraft, come Warlords Draenor time, you know, if you want in. We're on the Cosmodon server alliance. Just, you know, send us you know how to get a hold of us. Get a hold of us.
Indeed. No gnomes.
Preferably no. Gnomes suck ass.
No gnomes. So that's the good news as far as WoW goes. Let's talk about the not so good news.
Yeah. this is something, I mean, it does tick me off because it's stupid.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, is it going to have any gameplay impact? Not really. But it's one of those things that's just kind of stupid and irritating. So when they first, you know, announced Warlords of Draenor, like, yeah, you know, the Alliance is going to have their base of operations in Shadowmoon Valley.
And it was not only Shadowmoon Valley, it was the Black Temple, one of the most iconic pieces of architecture from the Burning Crusade.
Right, and that was cool. I mean, you know, the Black Temple was a big deal. You know, that was where, you know.
That's going to be our base!
Right, exactly. Except it's not going to be the Black Temple, it's going to be... God, whatever the hell the non-Black Temple name of the fucking thing is.
Yeah, when it was the Draenei Holy Temple, it had a name.
Right, yeah, but I mean, it's going to be the fucking Black Temple. And that was awesome. I mean, lore-wise, in-game, that's, you know, that's an iconic place. It's a place that means something. And the idea of, you know, this crusade against the Iron Horde, and, you know, you're operating out of the, you know, the Black Temple, basically, really, really heavy, awesome stuff. And
again, because the, I don't mean to interrupt, but just want to interject something that's kind of cool from a lore standpoint. It's still the Draenei Holy Temple at this point. And the Draenei are a light worshiping, race. So if you are playing a paladin, for example, from a roleplay perspective, that's pretty cool. Just wanted to put that out there, kind of adding to its allure.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Because, well, I mean, you know, both Mike and I do play Paladin's my main. It may be his main's technically warrior, but that's not the point.
A light worshipping warrior, though.
Well, yes. but you know, yeah. So yeah, that's cool. And the Horde was going to be in Frostfire Ridge, which is where Durotan, Father of Thrall.
It's where Thrall's people were from. So it's got significance to the Horde as well, because that's sort of where Thrall and the Frostwolves first came. That's their homeland, essentially.
Right, right. I mean, in Azeroth, Orgrimmar, the capital city of the Horde, is located in a zone called Durotar, which is named for Durotan, who is, you know, the head of the Frostwolf clan, and you're going to be meeting with him, and you're going to be operating out of his zone. And again, for the Horde, huge significance. You know, getting back to their roots in the most literal sense.
Mm-hmm.
But now, no. Fuck all of that. Fuck all of that. We're going to be having our fucking... base of operations in Ashan, which is a goddamn PvP zone, except wait, no. The faction capitals on Draenor won't be PvP, but there'll be a PvP zone.
There'll be a PvE zone in a PvP area.
They're like, well, you know, if you get to it by land, yeah, you have to go through a PvP zone, but there'll be flight paths and portals. Alright, fine. But, they're saying, well, you know, the fact that we get to promote PvP is just a perk. Motherfucker, don't be promoting PvP with me. I don't give a rat's ass about fucking PvP. I've been playing the goddamn game since 2008. If I was going to get into it, I would have by now.
Yeah.
Take your fucking PvP, stick it up your fucking cunt hole. I don't give a flying rat's arse about your fucking PvP.
Especially when PvP is...
And stop nerfing me for it!
Yeah, you don't even play PvP, but you keep getting punished for PvP.
Okay, now that rant is over... Sorry, ladies and gentlemen. really, I mean, where's the gravitas? Where's the feeling of the connection to the past? Where's the
exactly.
immersion? Where's the fucking immersion in the lore and in the world and all this shit that, you know, it's just like Mike and I have these fucking boners for? I mean, where the fuck is this? No, we get this fucking, you know, Honor Hold 2.0, as it's being called. And yeah, that's basically, you know, what it is. Though they are saying it's bigger. Well, whoop-de-diddly-fuck. And, okay, let me read a bit from their statement about this. Okay, let me get to the part where... So as development continued, we came to the realization that it just doesn't make sense for the Horde and Alliance to spend so much energy and resources building up a stronghold on Draenor, only to base their efforts out of someone else's city. We're not helping the Draenei or Frostwolves fight off the Iron Horde. They're helping us. The Alliance and Horde both have major bases of operation on Draenor. That should be where they're working from. What? Well, if they're helping us, fucker, help us and let's base our shit in your fucking city.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, okay, it says that along with the continued development of garrisons and the overall quest and story flow of expansion led us to the decision to develop the Horde and Alliance bases on Ashran into the main faction hubs instead of Bladespire and Karabor. Karabor, that's the
Karabor temple, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Promoting the world PvP area on Ashran is a nice perk, but it wasn't a factor in making that decision.
Bullshit.
That said, the Temple of Karabor and Bladespire Fortress are still there. We haven't removed them or anything like that. You won't be able to use your bank or check your auctions from there. But there are still fully built home cities for the Karabor Draenei and the Frostwolf Orcs, respectively. You'll still be able to explore them in their full glory. Fuck you. All right, you know, maybe this is a knee-jerk reaction on my part, but this really pisses me the fuck off.
No, I feel the same way.
This was needless. I don't understand. I mean, I kind of understand their reasoning a bit, but I really don't at the same time. More so don't, because, again, they're making things overly complicated. They're reading too much into it. They're coming across with some weird philosophical reason for this. Well, you know, we're not helping them, they're helping us. And I guess they want to place emphasis on the fact, you know, of how major of a military operation this is, that, you know, the Horde and the Alliance have their own operation, aren't relying on anybody else. Okay, I get that, but surely there's gotta be another way to do that. And I don't possibly see how that can be more important than that feeling that they were wanting to give us of immersion in this, of this Draenor of the past, this savage world, savage, Fred Savage, that they were fucking cramming up our ass in goddamn BlizzCon. I don't see how this overly convoluted, pulled out of their ass, corn in the feces looking for fucking point of moot philosophy is more important than the game's goddamn major selling point, which was immersion in the fucking past.
Yeah.
Again, sorry for the rant.
No. It
really turks me.
I feel the same way, because not only for the immersion that we've covered, but okay. In the current expansion, Mists of Pandaria, the Horde and Alliance bases are in the same area. It's the Shrine of the Whatever.
Right.
And it's like, okay, for Pandaria, for that particular story, that made sense.
Yeah, it made sense. They wrote it into the story. It was immersed as part of the lore. It was the Veil of Eternal Blossom.
Yeah,
they had
that's it.
Palaces. I'm like, hey, you know, we haven't let anyone in here in a fucking Coon's Age. Well, I guess we can renovate the place and let y'all stay. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so you had that and it worked. It fit into the story. This is different. This feels very artificial. It feels very forced.
Mm-hmm. Indeed. Indeed.
I mean, why would... Well, okay, I guess you could argue from a lore standpoint that after the war is over, you know, since, you know, the Horde is kind of, I wouldn't say a puppet of the Alliance at this point, but they're in no position to make any demands of anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they just decide along with the Alliance, since this is kind of a joint operation to an extent, you know, we'll base our shit here. Well, that's fine, but
my problem with it is that it previously having the base of operations in the Iron Horde, in the Black Temple, and in the home of the Frostwolf clans, it gave each faction its sort of unique identity. And now we're just going to have probably identical bases set up in the same zone, and it just loses that uniqueness.
Yeah, like we were saying earlier, each one of these places had, well, I mean, the Black Temple arguably has meaning to everybody because it was a huge raid in Burning Crusade. But to the Alliance, who the Draenei are part of the Alliance, this is a holy temple for them. The Alliance predominantly, their main religion is worship of the light, though there are races in the Alliance that don't, and that's fine. But it still has immense significance for multiple reasons to the Alliance. And the Horde, well, by God, that's where they got their actual start, kind of, in a way. It's like, that has huge significance to them. Mm-hmm. And as a Horde player, I can only imagine, that how awesome they would think that would be. I mean, I'm not a Horde player, of course, everyone knows that. But, I could see where that would be maybe even more meaningful to them than what we were going to be at was for us.
Mm-hmm.
And they're just saying, fuck you to all of us.
Yeah.
All right, Hordies, y'all like to get all bent out of shape. Go, do your thing. Do your Hordy thing. Loctar Agar, fucking have at it. Because this is fucking bollocks.
Yeah. I don't know. It comes off as making everything seem generic, and it makes everything seem less special.
Again, does this impact gameplay? No, it doesn't. I mean, this is a part of the game that, a lot of people probably aren't going to care about. To really care about this, you kind of have to care about the lore. You kind of have to really want the immersion aspect of the game, and some people don't. For some people, it's just a video game like any other, and they enjoy the game mechanics, and they enjoy the challenge. And Mike and I do, too. But we're also, fantasy nerds.
Mm-hmm.
To an extent, and we find the enormous story behind all this to be, one of the game's main drawing points. It's depth and its breadth and it's all the work over a decade now,
mm-hmm.
that's been put into this. There's so much to know, and there's so much you can just read upon with the shit. And here you're almost going to no religious events intended to anybody, but you're almost going to the Mecca of, what has had such an impact,
yeah,
on the game.
Indeed.
And you're actually getting to play in this environment and work out of it, but no, you're being stuck on this goddamn island.
This PvP island.
That
if you try to get to it by any other means in a very specific way, assholes on the other faction will kill you just because.
Jimmy got ganked outside.
And you know what? I'm not even saying that as like a criticism. I'm not even saying that as like me coming down on anyone, because I'll probably do that. Like, now that you've given me the option, I'll probably just wait for some oblivious Hordy. Just be like, walk into my base.
It. That's what they want. Don't do it.
What? That's what Blizzard wants?
Yes. Don't do it.
I'll see some like level like 96 Hordy be like, I'm just rocking to my base. I'll be like level 100, be like, yes.
This pleases me. And you know what, PvPers, we're not mad at you. This is Blizzard's decision and has nothing to do with you guys. I get that. It's just that to me, this juxtaposition of a PvE center next to a world PvP area, it's not going to be fun for either of us. Mm-hmm. Us PvEers, us Hello Kitty faggots, whatever you want to call us, it's not going to be fun for us. It's not going to be fun for y'all either, because we're both going to be bitching and moaning at one another as usual, but even more so because we're crammed so close together. The forums are going to probably explode with fucking rage fits and rage shits and all this other shit. No one is winning with this.
No.
And maybe I'm blowing it out of proportion. Maybe I am. Maybe this is a knee-jerk reaction and you'll be like, hey, Jack, you see, it wasn't all that bad. And maybe. But I don't know. I don't like this. I don't like it at all, and it's got to burn.
I admit I was bummed out when they announced that, so I'm right there with you. I was like, oh, we're not going to get to go to the Black Temple. Like, oh.
Well, we'll still get to go,
but you know.
Going there on a tourist trip is different from feeling involved with it.
Indeed.
And likewise with, Bladespire, the Frostwolf area, you know, going there on a tourist trip is different from being involved with it. Mm-hmm. And hell, even as an Alliance player, I'd like to, you know, take a peek at, you know, Frostridge and Bladespire and all that other shit. Who knows? Maybe I'll use my 90 boost on a Horty, but, I don't know. They're important parts of the game. They're important parts of the lore. And whether you're Alliance or Horde, if you're into the lore, you're into it, and you can at least respect both from that standpoint, no matter what your opinion may be. And I think we're all kind of losing out, and I think they're losing out on a really big opportunity to draw more people into that aspect of the game.
Yeah.
By doing this. I think a lot of people maybe would be more open to knowing more about the backstory and the lore of World of Warcraft if they had more exposure to it and were made more aware of it in a way that's not intrusive necessarily. Because, you know, you always have the thing of, well, I never read the quest text. And I admit, I a lot of times don't either.
Nobody reads it.
Unless it's for like a quest chain that I know is going to be interesting.
Yeah. There are some times where they.
Right. Like for Pandaria, most of the shit, you know, directly involving the war with the Horde, I would read because interesting. But, you know, I don't care that Farmer Bob wants you to go, you know, rape 5 sheep in the Arse, and he'll, you know, when you come back, he'll make you a fucking sheepskin condom.
Or, in Westfall, where it's like, I need 5 piles of mud to make a mud pie.
Yeah.
And then you're like, World of Warcraft, endless adventure.
Yeah. I remember like one quest in Westfall, your quest reward was a glass of milk.
Yeah.
Fuck you. Fuck you.
You made me collect like coyote dongs for a half an hour.
Yeah. I got shot at. Have some ice cold milk. Fuck you.
But yeah, you know, I'm bummed.
No gold having motherfucker.
Where's my gold?
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm bummed that we're missing out on that. That's gonna, I was looking forward to it and I don't get it because I don't, you know, I couldn't even get Gilneas. And so I have to get stuck with – I don't even get the Black Temple now. They just keep taking things away from me. They keep taking things that I want to see away from me.
I don't know. I mean, part of me wants to say, you know, maybe there will be such a player backlash on this that they'll recant and change it back.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, I don't know how much of a backlash there's been on this. Later on, I'll, you know, check the forums, or maybe we both can and see if anyone's been really bitching about it. I don't know. But as it stands, yeah, no, Mike and I, we're not happy campers with this shit. I mean, we'll get over it, I guess. It's still always going to be one of those, you know, what could have been moments, though.
Yeah, it's going to be like, this is all right, but this could have been really cool.
Yeah, it could have been a lot cooler if they'd done it the way they'd originally planned. Now, if they said that there was a programming reason why they couldn't do it, or a resource reason, or a time reason why they didn't think it was practical, that would be different. It would still suck, but I would understand.
But that's not the case. They're like, oh, we came out with some stupid philosophical reason.
Right. Their reasoning for do it feels very contrived, very convoluted.
Mm-hmm.
It seems like they're overthinking it a bit too much, but whatever. I mean, what can we do?
Indeed. We're going to circle round back to movies I want to address one thing before we close out the show tonight. It appears as if there's been a leaked bit of information regarding Star Wars Episode 7's potential plot. Now, again, this is a rumor. This is, you know, leaked info. significance of which, you know, take it with a grain of salt. It might not be reflective of what ends up on screen, but the current rumor is that the main plot of Episode 7 will involve Luke Skywalker having gone missing and Han Solo has to travel the galaxy to find him.
The only reason why I would not say hot damnity who gives a fuck would be, like, I mean, we know these characters are getting up there in age. Maybe Luke's on an Alzheimer's trip.
Like, Luke went out to get, like, milk, but then had an Alzheimer's attack and ended up on the other side of the galaxy.
Yeah, I mean, you know, he just kind of wandered off because they didn't, you know, he missed his meds.
They didn't give me my brain medicine.
You know, honestly, at this point, I
let me tell you what will save this plot point. Harrison Ford.
Giving a shit?
Exactly. If they play this up as Han Solo's been looking for Luke the entire time, for like a really long time, then they can just do Han Solo is now just incredibly bored and disinterested. If that's a part of the show, if I mean that's a part of the movie, is like they just write Harrison Ford not giving a crap anymore into the script.
Yeah, maybe he will give a shit for this. I mean, maybe. I mean, Ender's Game, I mean, he obviously, I mean, there were no fucks being given
anywhere. I'm Harrison Ford. I'm reading my script.
Yeah. Hello, I'm Harrison Ford. I'll be your A-list actor for the evening. I hope you enjoy me saying these lines. And we did because it's Harrison Ford. Mm-hmm. And he knew it.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I still love the end of that movie, though.
LOL, you got genocided.
Yeah, you got trolled, motherfucker. That wasn't no simulation. You just fucking nuked all them fuckers. Oh, my God. Look at him. He's crying. Look at him. He's crying. I told you he'd fucking cry. Nigga, you owe me $50.
Also, lol, little kid, you're worse than Hitler.
Yeah. And then he decides to go atone to the ant people. The fuck? Shut the hell up. They tried to kill us, you little fucking jit. But anyways, I mean, yeah, you know, Harrison Ford, maybe he'll give a fuck about this. I mean, this is what started him.
Yeah, this is the thing. But he has kind of been uninterested in Star Wars for a while. I know in Empire Strikes Back, he asked for them to kill Han off, and they didn't. And then he asked to be killed off in Return of the Jedi. And
kill me!
So I kind of get the feeling that he's kind of wanted out of this for a while. So maybe if they finally agree to kill Han off in old age, then he might, you know, give a shit. He might actually put something into the performance.
Well, I don't know. I mean, okay. Maybe this is – okay. This is 30 years later.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe his opinion's changed. I mean, look at – okay, Leonard Nimoy. I am not Spock. Next book, I am Spock. I mean, maybe it's one of –
I am never going to play Spock again. Hi, I'm in the two new movies.
Yeah. Yeah. Would you like me for your Star Trek birthday party?
Exactly.
I'm Leonard Nimoy, bitch. And maybe there's been a similar, like, shift in thought on Harrison Ford's part with this.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, maybe he will give fucks. Maybe he'll be paid enough money to give fucks. I mean, who knows?
It is Disney. They could just, like, drive a dump truck of money and be like, look, Harrison.
They could give him money.
Just be like, don't be an asshole for, like, the 2 hours that we film you.
Right. And they could give him money, hookers, a small moon.
Exactly.
I mean, it's Disney. You know, they can. Would you like Estonia? You know that?
They just set Harrison Ford up as dictator of Estonia. That's his reward for giving a shit in Star Wars Episode 7.
Yeah, I mean, you know. I didn't know you guys done that. Well, we don't yet, but I mean, all it takes is a phone call.
And then you see, like, the streets of Estonia, just like Harrison Ford is watching you.
Yeah. Oh, God.
So yeah, that's episode 7, potentially. You know, again, it's just a rumor. Nothing's confirmed. So no one, you know, freak out. We're just discussing what's floating out in the ether that is the internet.
I mean, again, I have no dog in the Star Wars fight, but I'll say this much in terms of saying something constructive about this for the Star Wars fans out there. You know, I'll side with you guys on this. I mean, there's a lot of fiction that was built up after the movies.
The extended universe.
The extended universe, you know. And granted, no, I know they can't make everyone happy by taking bits and pieces of it, but they should at least try to stick to some of the more universal themes from it.
Mm-hmm.
And at least have some homage to it somewhere in some way and show that they give a shit.
Which when Disney,
when
Disney first bought Lucasfilm and announced that they were going to make more movies and people asked, will they be based in the extended universe? Disney did not handle that in the most tactful way possible. We were like, nah, bitch, all that shit, it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, I don't know. Honestly, I think we'll see some – I'll see more of the more popular bits referenced, but I don't expect them to take any significant expanded universe story and just, like, adapt it to the big screen. That's so not happening. They've already said they're resurrecting Vader. And I don't know how that works because Vader actually had a natural story arc through the first three movies before they turned him into a whiny teenager where he went from being this unrepentant bad guy who blew up a planet for shiggles and then they kind of turn – and then they – like he's redeemed by the end. It's a very – it's a natural – character progression, and then they're just like, no, Vader's gonna be back, he's gonna be evil, cause we need to sell those Darth Vader toys.
Because reasons.
Yes, I mean, we can't make a new iconic villain for this new trilogy, that would require work. We'll just bring Vader back.
Yeah.
But, yeah, you know, that's all we know. Again, bits and pieces of the new Star Wars films, coming out, and I suspect it's gonna be that way for a while, because, honestly, there's going to be a – even after the prequels kind of raped everyone's souls, they're going to – there's still going to be a lot of hype around the around this. And I can see Disney wanting to keep the lid on it, on things as for as long as they can. So
okay. Here's my final thoughts on this.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to tie this into Transformers as well.
Mm-hmm.
Did we, as a race, as a society, have our last original creative thought in some hookered up Coke party around a pool in 1985?
I think so, yeah. Because everything since then has been like a reimagining or a remake or whatever. But yeah. Yeah. I mean, say what you want about Star Wars. Star Wars was original when it came out. And then they gave George Lucas complete creative control for the prequels, and but you know what? Don't bring Vader back. Don't fucking bring Vader back. Bring Palpatine back.
Yes.
Because goddammit, he was the only thing. He was the only enjoyable part about the prequels.
Like Mecha Palpatine?
Yeah, like they, like the remnants of the Imperial Starfleet, like find Palpatine's body in like the wreckage of the Death Star, and like we get like Robo Palpatine, and he's just like cackling like a madman, like Ultimate Power 2.0.
It'd be better than Jar Jar.
I'm just saying, Palpatine was delightful in the prequels, so bring him back. Yes, that the hate flow through you.
You know, I mean,
Palpy's fantastic. I'd bring him back. Don't bring Vader back. Bring Palpy back.
With regards to this new Star Wars trilogy, I will be one of the easier people to please with it.
Mm-hmm.
Because, I mean, I don't really care about Star Wars. I don't really dislike it. I just don't care.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I'll be one of the easier people to please. And even I think this whole thing of bringing Vader back is kind of stupid.
Pelpy back. That's where the money, that's where the box office dollars are.
I mean, everybody and their fucking mother literally has seen Star Wars. Mm-hmm. Whether you liked it or not, you know, whether you're a Trekkie or a Star Wars fan or, you know, a fucking 80-year-old woman, you've probably seen fucking Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
And you probably remember most of it. Man, even I, who give no shits, know that this is not, if they're, from what I'm hearing about this, this is not going to go well.
Yeah, Pelpy coming back, Vader coming back, not promising. Bring Pelpy back.
Yeah, no, I mean.
Bring Pelpy back.
Yeah, I mean.
Do it, guys.
yeah, he died, blah, blah, blah. Well, I mean, you never see.
Well, Vader died too. So obviously they're not, you know. Fuck, right, not only did Vader die, Luke burnt his body.
Right, well, I mean, okay, for one thing, okay, you know Vader fucking died because you've seen the real Vader and then later on Hayden Christensen fucking in the ethereal sky cloud, butt fuck, whatever, then the movie when they fucking went in and redid everything.
Yeah.
But Palpatine, they just showed his ass just fucking falling down the middle of the goddamn Death Star. So there's like, okay, you have a plausible lack of confirmation there for death.
Uh-huh.
And his character art, I mean, he was the one, again, a one-note character who was great and served his purpose.
Mm-hmm.
He was fucking evil.
And he enjoyed, and he reveled in it in the prequels. That's what made him so great in the prequels, was that everyone had this stupid sense of vague characterization in the prequels, and they really didn't know who the main character was in those films.
Yeah.
But god damn it, Pelpy was just evil, and he loved being evil, and you could tell the actor playing him knew that movie was, those movies were shit, and he just hammed it up. He's like, yes, young Skywalker, the Sith aren't so bad.
Yeah, I mean, exactly. I mean, he did his thing. Character-wise, I mean, he's a one-note character. Good thing. You know, it's a good thing that he is.
Yeah, Palpatine doesn't need layers.
Yeah, no, bring him back. I mean, that makes more sense.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to harm the original fiction if you do that.
Mm-hmm.
It'd make a known antagonist. You can again have that connection with the previous movies. Just like you would with Vader. So why not do that? But no, we're just going to fuck everything in the ass.
Mm-hmm.
Because originality, fuck it. They can even be unoriginal correctly.
I know. It's going to be so bad.
And I don't even care about Star Wars and I'm pissed off about this.
It's just going to be.
It's fucking stupid.
Yeah.
I don't care about Star Wars, but I care about stupid. I'm allergic to stupid, and this is stupid.
Indeed.
It's like Iron Man 3 levels of stupid, almost. Almost.
No, that'll be if, like, they bring Vader back, but then announce it's not really Vader, but, like, Ian Anderson on coke.
But that would make more sense! That would actually improve this.
Like, they finally get to Vader's, like, headquarters, and it's just, like, Ian Anderson on coke. Like bumbling around with like one of those Vader voice changer helmets that they sell.
Yeah. And for those who don't know, Ian Anderson, lead singer of Jethro Tull, mm-hmm. a bit of an inside thing. I'm big Tull head. That was the first thing I thought when I seen Ben Kingsley is the Mandarin, like in his real form as Trevor.
Yeah,
he reminded me of kind of like Ian Anderson with Alzheimer's, like this very eccentric. Kind of guy, that's very eccentric, kind of off the wall Englishman.
Yeah.
Who had just gone off his fucking rocker years ago. And I'm like, oh my god, it's Ian Anderson with like fucking Alzheimer's or some shit. What the hell? You know, and that's why he's saying that. And, you know, yeah, that would be an improvement in this case. I mean, Whatever.
Indeed. Well, we'll have more news for you on Star Wars Episode 7 as it becomes available. J.J. Abrams, ladies and gentlemen. Anyway, that's going to be it for tonight. Forgot to plug our crap. You can catch us on send us an email at basicallysportshow@gmail.com and catch us on Twitter at @ageekshow. And you can catch us on iTunes, Stitcher, Spreaker. You can catch us at the website, basicallysportshow.com, and, of course, on YouTube as well. So for Jack, this is Mike, signing off episode 22.
Good night, everybody.
Please hang up and try again.